Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Adesman, I'm a Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. I'm today joined by Bassam Fatou, who's Director of the OIS, and we're here today to discuss the current oil market and the latest OIS Oil Monthly that is being published this week. Now, just to timestamp this podcast, we're recording it on the morning of Monday, the 12th of June, 2023. Bassam, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thank you, David, for having me.
Bassam, the latest OPEC Plus meeting attracted a lot of media attention. So can I ask you, why is that? And what were some of the key decisions that the group took?
I think the latest OPEC Plus decision is quite unique because of its multiple layers. To start with, OPEC Plus countries agreed a new deal that starts in January 2024 and ends in December 2024. Also earlier this year in April, several OPEC Plus countries announced voluntary cuts until the end of 2023. These countries have now agreed to extend these voluntary cuts until the end of 2024. So this announcement will give more visibility to the market about OPEC Plus supply next year. Also, for the first time since April 2020, the meeting addressed the very thorny issue of baselines and quotas. The formal output targets remained unchanged for the rest of 2023, but there will be adjustments in 2024. OPEC Plus countries agreed to lower the targets for several countries that are struggling to meet their current production quotas. Those are mainly the African producers, while raising the output target for other countries to reflect their expanding upstream capacity. So if one takes into account all the adjustments in output targets and the voluntary cuts, the output ceiling at the start of 2024 is lower than the start of 2023, which in 2024 will be at 38.8 million barrels per day. And this is an indication that OPEC Plus is taking a cautious approach in this uncertain environment. Adjusting the output targets was not an easy task and took days of negotiations. Also, one of the key innovations in the latest agreement is the introduction of independent assessment of OPEC Plus countries' upstream capacities. In the past, each country used to declare its production capacity without any independent verification or assessment. For many countries, the declared capacities usually came at much higher levels than the actual levels because countries wanted to negotiate higher output quotas. In the new agreement, all OPEC Plus countries will go through an assessment process by independent bodies to be completed by the end of June 2024. And this independent assessment would help OPEC Plus to decide on more realistic production targets for the group in 2025. And this is new, as OPEC has never undertaken such an exercise before. And David, on top of all of these announcements, Saudi Arabia declared a voluntary cut of 1 million barrels per day. This is in addition to the voluntary cut of 500,000 barrels per day announced back in April. So Saudi Arabia started 2023 from a production target of around 10.5 million barrels per day. With the 500,000 barrels per day reduction in April and the latest announcement of an additional 1 million barrels per day cut for the month of July, this will take Saudi Arabia's production to around 9 million barrels per day in July. And given that in July, domestic oil consumption in the kingdom usually goes up due to burning liquids in the power sector, the impact on Saudi exports could be large. And one final point, at the broader level, there was a lot of talk about rifts between key OPEC Plus countries. Particularly, there was some speculation that the UAE will leave the group because the UAE is not happy with its production target. This issue has been resolved, and there is now a process on how to assess countries' upstream capacities, which will provide a much more objective, fairer, and a more transparent way to calculate quotas in 2025 and beyond. So, David, there is really a lot to unpack in this latest OPEC Plus decision.
So, Bassam, why don't we start with the quota issue, which, as you say, has taken a lot of effort and diplomacy to resolve?
I think this is a key decision, as OPEC Plus quotas were becoming detached from actual production. And this was complicating the output decisions, but also making it more difficult to assess the impact of cuts. For instance, last year, OPEC Plus announced a cut of 2 million barrels per day. But some of this cut was what we call a cut in paper barrels, as many countries were not able to meet their quotas. Just to give an example, in November 2022, Nigeria was given an output target of around 1.75 million barrels per day. In April 2023, according to secondary sources, Nigeria produced around 1.2 million barrels per day. This is well below its output target. So from January 2024, Nigeria's output target will be reduced. Now, contrast this with the UAE, for example. In November 2022, the UAE was given an output target of around 3 million barrels per day. In April 2023, and again, according to secondary sources, UAE produced close to its quota. But unlike Nigeria, the UAE has higher estimated upstream capacity than current production and can produce well above its quota. So from January 2024, UAE's output target has actually been revised upward by 200,000 barrels per day. Now, David, some in the media described the outcome as a loss to Africa and gain to the GCC. I don't see it this way. It just reflects the fact that many African producers have lost upstream capacity over the years due to lack of investment and other challenges facing their oil sector, while other countries which happen to be in the Gulf have ambitious plans to increase capacity and they manage their oil sector better. And in a way, this should be reflected in the quotas. But in any case, there is now an independent process. And if as a result of this process, some of the African producers end up with higher estimates of upstream capacity, this will be reflected in their future quotas.
Now, I understand the quota issue, Bassam, but what really attracted the most attention is the voluntary cut by Saudi Arabia, which has been referred to as the lollipop, or I dare you. So why do you think Saudi Arabia decided on the voluntary cut?
Yes, David, you are correct. The Saudi cut attracted the most attention from the latest OPEC Plus decision. And I think simply because this has more immediate impact on the market. But I think it's important to put the voluntary cut in some context. First, this cut is 100% Saudi Arabian. So in terms of credibility, Saudi Arabia usually delivers on its commitment. So overall, the market believes that this cut will be delivered in full. Second, this is not the first time that Saudi Arabia implemented such a cut. Back in 2022, they implemented a similar type of cut for a few months. There are some people who compare this latest decision to the 1980s when Saudi Arabia acted as the swing producer. I don't think this is the case. Saudi Arabia has made it very clear that it will not act as the swing producer. And the March 2020 decision, when the COVID shock hit, demonstrated very clearly that Saudi Arabia did not hesitate to shift to market share strategy when other producers were not willing to cooperate. And there is no other producer that is more effective in the market share game if they decide to shift strategy, given their spare capacity. I think this is more of a tactical decision, David. I think it creates an element of surprise in the market, which may be needed at times to impact market positioning and sentiment. Perhaps it was taken to encourage other players within OPEC Plus to comply with their quotas by showing leadership. And it could be a precautionary move in a very uncertain environment. But regardless of the motivation, most importantly is the impact that this voluntary cut of 1 million barrels per day would have on market balances and the drawdown of inventories. Before the cut, based on our balances, we were expecting the deficit to reach an average of around 600,000 barrels per day in the second half of this year. With the voluntary cut, these deficits will be higher now at around 800,000 barrels per day. By the way, our oil demand growth numbers for 2023 are lower than the IEA. So if we are to use the IEA's demand numbers, the deficits would even be larger in the second half of this year. Of course, now the focus is going to be on when these barrels will be returned to the market. Will this cut be for 1 month or several months? And what will be the state of the market at that time when these barrels return to the market?
But Bassam, many people are of the view that this cut has failed as prices did not respond. So what do you think? Did this cut deliver or did it not deliver?
The main issue with these arguments is that we don't know the counterfactual. What if Saudi Arabia did not announce this voluntary cut? Would have prices fallen sharply? Also, prices have been rising before that decision, perhaps in anticipation of some sort of an OPEC plus cut, and some of the price gains would have been achieved before the meeting. Also, David, it's important to remember that the cut announced is for the month of July. So the impact on market balances will not be visible until late July or early August, given the logistic of transporting crude to end buyers, and also take into account the lags involved in the data coming through. Currently, the market sentiment seems to be dominated by recessionary fears and is not willing to incorporate potential tightness in the third quarter and the fourth quarter. Perhaps traders, financial investors want to see the actual tightness before they buy into the tighter market narrative. So it's possible if there is a realization of big stock withdrawals, the market may respond and the impact of this cut will be felt later in the year. Of course, this will depend on whether the expectations of tightened market are realized, which cannot be taken for granted given the current market uncertainty. So I would say that it's too early to estimate yet the full impact of the Saudi voluntary cut.
So, Bassam, you know, OPEC Plus finds itself trying to perform a very balancing act, but this must be very difficult to play in such a current uncertain environment, isn't it?
Very true. You know, the macro picture is very uncertain. Many are concerned about a recession in the second half of this year in the developed world. It's not clear yet whether the interest rate cycle and inflation have peaked in many countries. Also, China's opening after COVID has not lived to many people's hyped expectations. Considering this, the numbers on oil demand growth remain relatively good, and many, including us, are expecting the market to go into deficit and for crude stocks to draw in the second half of this year. So from OPEC perspective, the choices become more challenging. Do you cut now as a precautionary measure to keep the market supported, or do you just wait until fundamentals tighten? Some describe this as a choice between the precautionary and patience approaches. Given the market sentiment, OPEC may have to be both. It has to be precautionary and it has to be patient.
Okay, but isn't OPEC trying to target an oil price? And if it does not reach the target, will OPEC Plus need to implement further cuts?
OPEC always avoids discussing prices and doesn't have an official price target. Of course, this by no means implies that they don't care about prices. Of course they do. If they don't, this would be irrational, given the importance of oil revenues for their fiscal balances. But targeting a price is not a fruitful exercise, as countries will have very different price preferences, each depending on their individual situation. Also, the price preference needs to change all the time depending on market conditions, as you can have a preference for a price, but you cannot achieve it in certain market conditions. OPEC have tried price targeting and price bans in the past, and it did not work. Of course, a fundamental reason behind the creation of OPEC is for countries to try to optimize their revenues, given any set of market conditions, and compare this to a situation when there is no cooperation between producers. And not only to optimize revenues, but to try to stabilize these revenues if possible. And the tools they have to achieve these objectives are to adjust output and signal to the market. At the same time, they have to be conscious that in pursuing the objective of optimizing revenues, prices don't rise too much to affect oil demand or jeopardize the health of the global economy. But David, so far the cuts have not resulted in sustained rise in price levels, and the price continue to trade in the 75-85 range. So there is little risk on demand from explosive oil prices. So in a way, it has always been a balancing act driven by market fundamentals. But also, David, one has to recognize that at a more fundamental level, embargoes, price caps, government interventions have all contributed to a more segmented market with large volumes of sanctioned crude and products being traded and with wide divergence in prices. And this is very much impacting visibility and pricing. All producers, including from OPEC, have now to deal with much more segmented and less transparent markets, which is making it more challenging to navigate.
Now, one of the factors highlighted is Russia's exports and its non-compliance. So how will this impact on Russia's position within OPEC, do you think?
The G7 embargo on Russian crude and product imports meant that Russia had to find new outlets. And these outlets have been the Asian markets, particularly China and India. So yes, the competition in Asia has intensified, especially that Russia is selling its crude and products at discounted prices. And this is certainly impacting pricing power for all producers, and they have to compete with cheaper barrels in Asia. But in terms of export volumes to Asia, the impact has been more on non-term barrels, such as West Africa, and less on countries like Saudi Arabia that sell on term basis. In fact, if one looks at Saudi crude export to Asia before and after the Russia-Ukraine war, the number are more or less the same. I don't think the issue is only about market share. This could change, and Saudi Arabia can always compete more aggressively in Asia to keep its share. It has the volumes, the marketing ability, and it has the added advantage to Russia as well, that it's a reliable supplier. The issue for Saudi Arabia, and this is not new, is the cohesion within OPEC Plus. Otherwise, the group will lose its effectiveness. And at the heart of the cohesion is for countries to comply with their quotas. This is why the emphasis has always been on fairness and cohesion, and compliance is key to this. In the current environment, and with Russia no longer publishing its oil production numbers, there has been a lot of debate on Russia free riding on the OPEC decisions. I think this is a challenge that OPEC and Russia will have to manage. The Saudi approach for now, in the words of the Saudi energy minister, is to trust and verify, but with a strong emphasis on the need for transparency in Russia supply, and that Saudi will not tolerate non-compliance. I don't think Russia has an interest in the OPEC Plus agreement collapsing if concerns about non-compliance reach a breaking point.
Okay, but what does the latest series of cuts say about US-Saudi relations more generally, and oil relations in particular? Do you believe that the relationship has been broken?
I don't think so. It's important to remember that the US remains a strategic military and economic partner to Saudi Arabia and the Gulf Cooperation Council, the GCC. The fact that the GCC countries are recalibrating and diversifying their relations with other powers such as Russia and China does not mean in any way that the relationship with the US has become less important or less strategic. But it does mean that the Gulf countries have to play a more balancing act between different interests and foreign relations in a very fragmented geopolitical world. When it comes to oil relations, it has become clear for a while now that there is divergence in approaches between the US and Saudi Arabia towards managing the oil market. The US relied very heavily on the release of crude from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to manage the market, despite the fact that the Russian supply losses were limited. And that, in a way, helped put a cap on the oil price last year. Saudi Arabia within OPEC Plus followed a more gradual and cautious approach, optimizing the use of its spare capacity, and did not respond to US calls to change their approach and put all their capacity into the market. Perhaps because they took a more cautious and realistic approach about the size of the Russian oil disruption and the state of the demand recovery. So there is divergence at the policy level, and views regarding the market fundamentals. But David, at another level, with the US shale industry focused on maximizing returns to shareholders and not output growth, and OPEC maximizing revenues to its main shareholders, i.e. the governments, the behavior of the two have become more aligned. At the policy level, there is divergence, but at the industry level, there is more convergence between OPEC Plus and US shale, as long as US shale players remain focused on returns, which seems the case for now, and if they don't pursue growth at any cost.
But some in the media keep referring to the Saudi First doctrine, and this has meant a kind of a fundamental change in Saudi policy and relations with the US, hasn't it?
Well, yes, I keep hearing this phrase, Saudi First policy, though I'm not sure what it exactly means. If it means that Saudi Arabia should give priority to its own interests, then I think this is only rational. All countries must do that. I think what is meant by this phrase is that by Saudi Arabia promoting its own interest and in a more assertive way, this would destabilize the oil market and would harm the interests of others, or would come at the expense of either other consumers, and that may include the US. But I would think that having a stable and well-functioning oil market is an important component of Saudi First policy. And for a large producer, it's key that oil prices don't rise too high to impact oil demand. an unstable and volatile market is not good for all for producers and their wider oil relations, including Saudi. David, what I'm trying to say is that first, Saudi policy and stable and less volatile oil markets go hand in hand. They don't really need to be in conflict with each other, as sometimes it's portrayed.
But is there not a risk that by OPEC tightening supplies too much, you know, it could complicate the kind of inflation picture and central banks managing inflation?
Well, this whole debate about inflation is quite complex. It's first important to remember that against many expectations and despite a series of cuts, the oil price has been trading in the range of 75 to 85, and it rarely has broken this range recently. The expectation that OPEC cuts will send oil prices to $100 and above and harm growth and developing countries did not really materialize. In fact, if anything, countries like India and China are benefiting from discounted crudes and products, which is offsetting part of the rise in energy costs following the Russia-Ukraine war. But more generally, it's important to remember that there are many contributing factors to the current inflation, and energy prices are just one of them. You know, one can think of supply bottlenecks, tight labor markets, wage inflation expectations, decades of easy monetary conditions, lax fiscal policies. And of course, there is energy. I'm not talking only about oil, but also gas and electricity. I think, David, it's really worth doing a detailed study on the relative contribution of crude oil to inflationary pressures. I doubt that in the current context, it has been a major contributing factor, but I think this is an area that is in need of empirical research. So I think, you know, until we see more evidence coming from the empirical space, it will be quite difficult, you know, to answer that question.
So, Bassam, to conclude, you know, let's look forward. You know, where do you see OPEC Plus in the next couple of years? Because there's been some talk about OPEC Plus losing the plot and that their actions have destabilized the market.
This has been a challenging environment for all market players. You had the COVID shock and then the Russia-Ukraine war. The geopolitical context has become more polarized. Policy makers all over the world are still grappling to control inflation. China economic and energy policies have become more volatile. Also, the oil market has become more segmented and less transparent as a result of sanctions, embargoes, price caps, various forms of government intervention. And by the way, we are seeing this government intervention in all energy markets, including oil. Also, the liquidity in the derivatives market have been declining, and the nature of players in this market have changed, with the positioning in paper markets having a big impact on short-term price movements. And all of this is happening against the background of the transition. So navigating the market and trying to bring stability to this market and optimize revenue has become more challenging for all players, including OPEC Plus. So they need to concentrate on what they do best. And I think given this environment, I think there will be multiple fronts that OPEC would be focusing on. The first one that, as we discussed before, is to try to strengthen the cohesion within the group. OPEC hopes that the latest decisions regarding quotas and independent assessment of productive capacity actually can streamline the decision-making process in the future and bring fairness and transparency, which will help the cohesion goal. And it also can bring more visibility to the market. Also, the issue of non-compliance and transparency in Russia production need to be addressed. So on the production level, they are likely to continue to take the cautious approach and bring barrels into the market only when they see and confirm that market fundamentals have improved. The more difficult part I see looking forward is how to give visibility to the market about their production while retaining some element of surprise to be in a position to influence the narrative and sentiment when they think it's needed. After all, David, OPEC is a key player in the market, and like any player, they want to shape the narrative and the dynamics within the levers they have, especially if they believe that the oil market is being destabilized either through government interventions or by players using the oil market to short sell on the back of news unrelated to oil fundamentals. After all, this is too important market for OPEC Plus and for the stability of their countries.
Well, Bassam, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation, as always, that updates us all on the current state of the oil market after the June OPEC meeting.
Thank you, David, for having me.
I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.